Celebrating 30 years on Utah's airwaves, Western Life Radio thanks you for joining us around the campfire and for your ongoing support to Utah's longest-running home, garden, travel, and outdoor adventure program. You can always join us on our online campsite at westernliferadio.com.
Is your boat registered and insured for the summer season? Most boats must have proof of insurance on board and be properly registered with bow numbers and stickers. Take the Utah Boating or Coast Guard Auxiliary courses and you just might get a discount on your insurance. For a copy, call 801-538-BOAT. This message brought to you by the Utah State Parks Boating Program.
Discover the magic within Utah State Parks with an annual State Parks Pass. From boating and fishing to hiking, camping, and off-highway vehicle adventures, Utah State Parks offers a wide variety of activities in the great outdoors. An annual State Park Pass opens the gate to year-round adventures at an amazing price. The annual State Park Pass provides day-use access for you and your family for 12 months from date of purchase. In addition, Utah State Parks opens the gate to cultural and historical parks where you can learn more about Utah's rich heritage. And don't forget to reserve your favorite campsites year-round with options in teepees, yurts, and hammocks in addition to the standard tent and RV options. Visit the trailhead for more information at stateparks.utah.gov.
Faster Utah empowers teachers, administrators, and other school staff to defend themselves in case of a school shooting. We teach advanced firearms and trauma first aid skills. Graduates of the Faster program pass the same post-qualification shoot as Utah law enforcement. For more information and find out how you can help, go to fasterutah.org.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends on Skype. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
Hi, I'm Phil Douglas from the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources, and I'd like to invite you to put a little wild in your life with a unique chance to see wild elk. Each winter, the DWR conducts sleigh rides to see Rocky Mountain elk at the Hardware Wildlife Management Area, located 17 miles east of Hiram, Utah, in the beautiful Blacksmith Fork Canyon. For hours, directions, and ticket prices, visit our website. Oh, what fun it is to ride!
There's nothing quite like the great outdoors, and at Sportsman's Warehouse, we share your passion for hunting, fishing, and camping. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. So whether you're ice fishing, predator hunting, snowshoeing, or winter camping, Sportsman's Warehouse has a terrific selection of all the latest equipment for your outdoor adventure. So when it's cold outside, that's the time to come and see what's hot inside at Sportsman's Warehouse. Sportsman's Warehouse. Take it outside.
Kindness. It's a single smile, a thoughtful word, a small, unexpected gesture. Whatever the act may be, it's something we call kindness. Yet sometimes in such a chaotic world, people forget the power that kindness holds. Kindness can brighten a moment, lift someone's spirits, turn a bad day into a good story. Kindness can make someone's week, or month, or year. kindness can restore faith in humanity. And some say it can even make us healthier. All with a simple, small, perhaps unseen or anonymous act. So, think about this. What would happen if a small act of kindness sparked another small act of kindness, and then another, and another, and another? What if kindness became contagious, and all the small gestures done by many would make an impact felt around the nation, around the world? Imagine that power. And all it takes is one kind act a day.
Savage now joins us with the Ogden Eccles Conference Center and Perry's Egyptian Theater. We're talking about a very fun event this weekend. It's the Hof German Fest. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us.
Thank you for inviting us too. We're super excited to be on your show today.
We're excited to have you on the program. This is an event that's been happening for, as I understand, for 29 years?
It's actually 39. We hit our 39th this year, and then we'll celebrate our 40th next year.
Almost 40 years. I hear about it every year, but I usually hear about it too late. So we got lucky catching you this time. I'm real excited to talk about this.
Well, I am too. It's an event that I love and truly have come to admire Ogden and the relationship that they have with Hof in Germany now.
How did that relationship get started?
So it actually started in 1956 when President Eisenhower decided to start a program that would combine foreign cities with cities within the U.S., and they developed this partnership. And so we call Hof our sister city because of that partnership that was developed then. And then we had Scott Snedden, who developed the Winter Festival in 1986 to 1991 when he was the Ogden City Mayor. And he brought it here, and they actually would have skiers that would ski down 25th Street to celebrate that partnership. And then it's just continued ever since then.
That is amazing. Hof is a great city. I've actually spent some time out there at least 20 years ago. They're world famous for their bratwurst because they're linked as doubles usually when they sell them on the streets.
Yes, and they're so good. My dad also, that's his favorite thing. He will find the best bratwurst cart and go as many times as he can when he goes to visit. So,
this is a neat event, and I'm glad you're doing it on the big weekend. It's part of a lot of other activities and fun events, but this here is a two-day event. It allows a lot of people a chance to get through the doors and taste some phenomenal food.
Yes, our food is actually fantastic and done by our in-house staff here at the Ogden Eccles Conference Center. Chef Zachary Dickerson is our chef and has been for about 9 years and head chef for about two now. And he has studied with Jan Weller at Weller's Bistro in Layton to kind of understand the German food a little bit better and make it more authentic. And so because of that, you will get some really good schnitzel, some awesome spätzle, rotkugel, macaroni salad, warm potato salad. There's so much food you can't leave hungry.
I bet. If you're going home hungry, it's your own fault.
Exactly. There's too much good food and breads and pretzels, and we have Petra that does her famous German dessert, and so there will be plenty of food for everyone.
You got the schnitzel, you got the Jäger schnitzel. It's translated as hunter schnitzel. That one has a brown mushroom gravy with it.
Yes, and that gravy is to die for. Everyone will need some of that. Even a cup maybe on the side for everything else.
The spetzla I'm real excited to taste. That's also got a mushroom gravy with it.
Yes, it does, and they make it more Bavarian, and so it's more of like a little dumpling than it is like a noodle. So it's more of a dumpling that you can add the gravy to it, and it's really good.
Interesting. Okay, that's cool. I make my own, and I actually make a noodle out of it. It's like the Black Forest style is the way I usually make mine, but also you have some fantastic rotkol, I hear.
Yes, we do. That purple cabbage is so good. My mother-in-law loves it, and she buys extra to take home.
Good to know. Okay, that's something we're put on the radar to taste.
Yes, for sure. You have to.
And you also have warm and cold potato salads?
Yep, they separate. So the warm potato salad has more of red potatoes, and then it has bacon and all that kind of good stuff in there.
And you do have lots of great beverages as well.
Yep, we do have lots of apple beer for everyone. And then we also have a ton of German beer that is coming in. And Golden Beverage and Wasatch Distributing are making sure that we're all taken care of and we're stocked and ready to go for everyone.
I'm real excited about it. Again, almost 40 years for this big event. And it's not just the food. There's also a lot of other fantastic opportunities there. You got a Kids Corner, for example.
Yeah, our Kinder Corner is run by the Weber School District German students. Kevin Stewart is over that, and he's a German teacher. And he has the students come and participate and volunteer to clear tables, go to the food line, run their Kinder Corner that has coloring pages, nutcrackers to decorate, paint by numbers, and they actually have students that'll teach your children German. So they should be able to walk away knowing how to say their name and some numbers in German. And all of those proceeds go to help these students make it to Germany, which is probably their number one goal, right? To learn this German and hopefully use it in the country. And so it's a great opportunity for these students to earn that money.
Do they get a chance to go to Hof specifically as part of their trip?
That's the hope, yes. That's kind of what they're trying. We actually have one of the students here that's an exchange student at Weber High School, and she's from Hof herself. So she's going to be here this year as well, and so she's super excited to be able to be here to celebrate with us.
Now, for folks unfamiliar with Hof, it's a smaller town. A lot of people are familiar with Munich and Stuttgart and Berlin and some of the other cities out there, but Hof is kind of off the radar for most folks. When you spend time in Germany, it's in the top part of Bavaria.
Yes. Yep, it's really tiny and quaint. And we were actually able to meet the mayor last year and 20 other dignitaries that came to celebrate with us last year. And they are some of the most genuine people you will ever meet.
I believe it. They're good people there. They're very well known for a lot of good food. There's so many bakeries out there. There's so many butchers out there and so many different types of bratwurst out there. I mean, as you go up and down the streets, it's really hard to decide what your afternoon snack's going to be.
Hey, you might as well just get it all. That's what we say here. If you're trying too hard to decide between, you might as well get both.
Exactly, and then save one for later.
Yes, exactly. Best idea ever.
Now, we talk about other fun events throughout the year. We talk about Oktoberfest in the fall time. We talk about the Greek festival and other things like that. I like it because it's outside of that time period where people are looking for opportunities to get away and have some fun indoors where it's nice and warm.
Exactly, and this is the perfect opportunity to do that, right? Come with your families. Tickets are reasonable. We have even a family deal where you can get two adults and four kids in for $25. So everything is great price. Students can get in for $6. It's not a very expensive activity to bring your family and get out of that cold, cold weather.
Let's talk about the entertainment. That is really what people come for and really enjoy while they're eating their snacks.
It is. It's one of our tops, right? And we have our amazing band, Salzburger Echo, that we just adore. We love working with this band, and they are so talented. They're very interactive with the kids and allow them to come use the bells. And they also have their alphorns, and they come and play those for us. It's such a delight to have them. We also have B&B All-Stars coming back. And then we have a new band this year, which is Chardon Polka Band. Some people may have seen them at Snowbird for Oktoberfest. And then another special edition this year is our Alphorns. They are coming, and we're actually going to have an Alphorn petting zoo. And so this petting zoo, you're going to be able to bring your kids, and they're going to be able to see what an Alphorn is and be able to actually try and play it.
No way.
Yes way. We are so excited to see this and have kids see this new opportunity, and maybe that'll be their new hobby.
That is really cool. I've never tried that before. I figured it's going to be pretty tough.
Well, then you better be here tomorrow coming to see what your skills are on it.
I will have to do that. I'm excited about that. What a cool idea.
Yes, it is really neat. They're donating their time in hopes to get the word out about how cool Alphorns are. People know about trumpets and drums and guitars, but a lot of people don't realize how cool the Alphorn is and how beautiful it is.
The Alphorns were actually designed in part to communicate from mountaintop to mountaintop for the sheep herders up there.
I didn't even know that. So you're teaching me something new today.
They were actually made, usually traditionally, out of one piece of wood, too, initially.
Oh, wow.
They're just so beautiful, how they harmonize with each other out on the hills.
Yes, that is beautiful.
I'm excited about this.
Yep, so come find us at the Ogden Nichols Conference Center. Parking is free, and you can find us on Kiesel Avenue between 24th and 25th Street.
For folks unfamiliar with the Ogden area, where is the theater and the conference center? How do they get to you?
So it's 2415 Washington Boulevard.
Washington Boulevard, easy to get to. What about parking?
So parking on Kiesel Avenue between 24th and 25th Street. There's a parking garage back there. And just look for the sign that says event parking, and our wonderful operations team will welcome you in.
Sweet. Again, this happens every year. It's been happening for a lot of years. Anything else on the radar that people should be checking out while they're at this festival?
Yes, we actually have a Valentine's Day dance that is coming up that everyone will want to come be a part of at the conference center. It's an event that we put on ourselves as the conference center in Peary's Egyptian Theater, and people are able to come hear amazing band that is run all by high school students.
No way. And yes. Tickets are available already? I bet they go fast.
They do actually go really fast. We can only fit a certain amount of people because we have a very large dance floor. So, fellas, grab some tickets for you and your lady to come have a really beautiful dinner and dessert and have the Crescent Super Band and Voodoo Orchestra, a sound house, come and fill your night with beautiful music and the great night out.
Other events throughout the year, tell us about what's going on at the theater upcoming.
So we have the Ogden Musical Theater that is doing A Tale of Two Cities here in the next month. And then we also have Annie this year and Dracula and so many amazing things happening. We also have a comedy event that's coming up for moms. And so it's called Mom's Unhinged Comedy Show, and that's coming up on January 22nd.
Check it out. That's right around the corner.
It sure is. So ladies, have your husbands watch your kids and come on over.
Tickets available. Where do they get those?
At Peary's Egyptian Theater, OgdenPET.com.
Anything else we should be talking about real quick?
Nope. I think that's about it for now.
I sure do appreciate you taking a few minutes with us. Taylor Savage joining us once again with the Ogden Eccles Conference Center and the Peary's Egyptian Theater, talking about the Hof German Fest this weekend in Ogden. I can't wait to check it out this weekend.
Well, we sure hope to see you. Just come and say hi to us.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Phil Douglas from the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources. Each winter, the DWR conducts sleigh rides to see Rocky Mountain elk at the Hardware Wildlife Management Area, located 17 miles east of Hiram, Utah, in the beautiful Blacksmith Fork Canyon. friendly drivers, powerful draft horses, comfortable sleighs, and up-close experience with the elk make this one of Utah's great wildlife traditions. Visit our website. Oh, what fun it is to ride.
Never drink and ride. Alcohol and snowmobiles do not mix. Alcohol slows down your physical and mental reactions, affecting balance, coordination, and most importantly, judgment. It also greatly reduces your risk of hypothermia. Know how prescription drugs affect you before riding. This information is brought to you by Utah State Parks OHV Education.
Keep yourself safe this winter season. Wear layers to protect yourself from winter's cold. Also keep a hat, scarf, and mittens on hand as essential winter gear. Select footwear appropriate for snow and slush, and be sure to keep extra dry clothing in your vehicle in case you get wet. These winter safety tips are brought to you by FEMA, the Region 8 Youth Preparedness Council, this station, and Western Life Radio. There's nothing quite like the great outdoors, and at Sportsman's Warehouse, we share your passion for hunting, fishing, and camping. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. So whether you're ice fishing, predator hunting, snowshoeing, or winter camping, Sportsman's Warehouse has a terrific selection of all the latest equipment for your outdoor adventure. So when it's cold outside, that's the time to come and see what's hot inside at Sportsman's Warehouse. Sportsman's Warehouse. Take it outside. Staying hidden for predator hunting means more than just hiding. We're disappearing into the scenery next on Western Life Radio.
Snowmobile clubs and associations are the root of nearly all snowmobile trails. They work with landowners and government agencies, hold fundraisers, clear brush and downed trees, do trail signing, build bridges, and spend the winter grooming trails. Snowmobile clubs also teach young riders to enjoy the sport safely. Join a club where you ride to help support trails, have fun, and share great experiences. Brought to you by the American Council of Snowmobile Associations and the Federal Highway Administration. Visit snowmobileinfo.org.
Wiley E. Coyote pays very close attention to changes in the scenery. Craig Heap with Sportsman's Warehouse checks the wind.
Camouflage is very important. Having the proper camouflage for the type of terrain you're in, as well as the time of year. If you're hunting in timber or in the sagebrush, if there's snow on the ground, that all varies, and it can be a little bit taxing to have camouflage for each of those situations. But there is some options out there that we can walk you through at Sportsman's Warehouse about having something that covers kind of all the gamuts, if you will. They have a very keen sense of smell, and I don't personally use cover scents. Every time you breathe, you're putting out more scent. So you can put all the cover scent on in the world, and if the wind is wrong for you, they're going to smell your breath. They're going to smell you sweating from walking in. They're going to smell your call, your seat, your gun, everything. So to me, the biggest, most important thing is to play the wind right rather than worry about cover scents. In fact, I don't use them at all. I don't use any cover scents or scent killers. They'll smell you from hundreds of yards away, and you'll never even see them. I've had some situations where now I don't do it, but back in the day, I parked and walked in several hundred yards and had a coyote coming in, and all of a sudden he just stopped, turned around, and left, and I couldn't figure it out. The wind was right. I stood up to leave and turned around to walk back to my vehicle, and there was the glistening of the windshield in the sunshine, and it's just something that I didn't think about at the time. They're not going to come in if they think anything's wrong.
Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff. Choose your adventure. With 46 state parks and an impressive list of recreational opportunities,
yes, bass fishing at Sand Hall State Park.
Visitors might have a hard time choosing what to do each weekend.
Woo! Windsurfing at Deer Creek State Park.
Choose your adventure. Explore Utah and create memories at Utah State Parks. For campground reservations, ideas for your next adventure, or to purchase an annual pass, stop by stateparks.utah.gov.
Hey, this is Brian Stinson from Be Ready Utah. Today, our topic is water storage. How important is water for emergency preparedness? Well, your body is about 60 to 70% water. Water is necessary for all bodily functions. You can only last 3 to 4 days without it. If you're thirsty, you're already dehydrated. So, one thing you want to do is store water. A lot of us talk about storing your 1,000 pounds of meat, but water is even more important. So if you've got those big barrels or some containers, make sure you fill them up. Make sure that you have a minimum of 1 gallon of water per person per day, and that's a half a gallon for drinking and a half a gallon for food preparation and sanitation. Now, I mentioned a minimum. That's bare bones minimum. Have you ever tried to live on only 1 gallon of water per day? It's really hard. I recommend storing more than that. So 1 gallon per person per day at a minimum, and store about 2 weeks' supply per person. So that's a minimum of 14 gallons for each member of your family. So you can do the math to figure out how much water you need to have for your family. When you're storing water, you want to store it in a container that is marked with the 2 in the rectangle, and it says HDPE. That stands for high density polyethylene. This is for long-term storage. That's what those big blue containers are, the little blue 5 gallon containers. They all have the HDPE on it. Now, if you don't have a lot of money for spending money on that, you can also use a really good rinsed out 2-liter, 3-liter soda pop bottle. Those work really well as well. Just make sure they're all rinsed out and fill them up with tap water. You think tap water, well, can't I just use bottled water? Tap water is actually, in a lot of ways, cleaner than what you get directly from the store. You don't need to add anything to municipal tap water before you fill it. It's already treated and ready for storage. Be sure to fill your container all the way up. That keeps the gaskets moist and it maintains an airtight seal. After you fill your container, you want to keep it someplace in your home that's cool, dark, and dry. Check your containers yearly and replace the water if it's necessary. If there is no leaks or contamination, water can be stored for 5 years or longer without any rotation. Don't store your water in glass or metal because of breaking and rust. Don't store your water in milk jugs. They break down and they become brittle. Don't store your water in containers which hold hazardous chemicals. You'll never be able to get those hazardous chemicals out. So again, water storage is so vitally important for your survival. Make sure that you've got at least 14 gallons for each member of your family. For more information, you can visit us at BeReadyUtah.gov. Thanks.
Hey, let's hit the lake. Put on your life jackets and let's go.
But Mom, when will I be old enough so I won't drown and I don't have to wear my life jacket? Will I be invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my life jacket too. Anyone can drown, no matter how old they are.
Accidents do happen. Protect yourself and set an example. Wear the proper safety gear when you're on the water. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
Now back to Western Life Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Mr. John Foster is joining us on the line with Utah Fieldhouse of Natural History State Park Museum. Thanks for taking a few minutes with us today.
Yeah, no problem.
It is an honor having you on the program. This is real exciting, actually. There was an incredible find in the Uinta Mountains of Utah in a cave. Tell us a little bit about this find.
Well, it is in a cave in the Uinta Mountains, a little bit north and west of Vernal. And it was found a number of years ago by cavers, actually, but nobody had touched it, luckily. Everybody just assumed it was somebody's pet dog or that it was something from a few hundred years ago. But the Forest Service did a test on one of the bones. It came back as being 26,000 years old, which is during the last ice age. And so when we found out about that part of it, we got interested in trying to collect the whole skeleton because that's a bit more rare around here. Northeastern Utah, we've only really got one other good, well-documented bone from the Ice Age. That's part of a camel that was found back in the 80s, actually.
I remember when that discovery came to light, and This is pretty exciting. I guess one of the biggest mysteries is this thing was found like a half a mile into the cave.
Yes, it was way in the back of the cave, and there were 9 of us on the group that went in there to get it out, and after hauling all our gear over and around and underneath all these obstacles in the cave, it took us, I think, 2.5 hours to get back there with all the gear, and it was just astounding that an animal had gotten that far back in total darkness, but those animals can see a lot better than we can, so I guess it was not too hard for a dog relative, I suppose.
In fact, that's what it was originally thought to be, was a dog.
It was, yeah. When we were told that it was a canid, we assumed it was some kind of dog and that it wasn't really that old. So when we found out that it was 26,000 years old, that's when we knew it had to be something a lot more interesting. So when it proved to be a fox that was that old, we were pretty excited.
I bet. You know, and I guess in 26,000 years, I guess the structure of the cave could have changed too. It may have had different access points. It may have since closed off.
Yeah, that's what we kind of assumed initially, was why would you go that far back into a cave? But we assumed that it maybe had fallen in some other entrance that had existed back then. I don't know how much the cave has changed, but from what the Forest Service geologist was saying about the age of all the formations, the flowstone and things like that that are inside the cave, apparently some of those structures are quite old, and it may not have changed as much as we originally assumed.
In fact, it was not far from some Bacon formations, correct?
Yeah, we passed some of that on the way in. That was really cool to see. Almost everything in the cave was really gorgeous. It's just we were so busy trying to figure out how to get all our gear and our supplies that were in our backpack through all these obstacles that it wasn't really until we looked at our photos that we realized how beautiful the cave was, because we were just too busy when we were in there.
I could see that. In fact, it took several hours to get in and out of that cave with the bones.
It did, yeah. It was about 6 hours total. By the time we got up to the cave, ate lunch, switched into our caving gear, and headed in there, it was about 1 p.m., and we didn't get back out to the mouth of the cave until about 7 p.m. So it was a couple hours in, a couple hours of photographing and collecting the fox skeleton, and then another hour or hour plus getting back out.
My goodness. I know a lot of people are asking also probably is, how were these bones preserved? Were they fossilized? Or you see all these wet formations in there. That would be kind of a challenge, I would think, to hold up that many years.
Yeah. Back in a part of the cave that's very humid, the humidity back there is very high, nearly 100%. But the skeleton was lying out on top of the mud. It's amazing that in 26,000 years, nothing had really washed away and it hadn't really been buried. And the fact that it was still just lying on the surface, partially articulated, was pretty impressive. But the bones weren't really fossilized. They had a little bit of mud on them since they were lying on the mud. And then all of the moisture in there was this very, very thin coating on some of the bones of calcium carbonate. Basically, the same material that was forming the cave formations had started to coat some of the bone a little bit.
Again, it took a while to get these specially packaged up to get them out safely, because they would be pretty fragile, I would guess, since they weren't fossilized.
It did, yeah. Photographing the specimen before we touched anything so that we preserved the information of how the animal was lying there, that took about an hour, and then collecting each of the bones individually and putting them in sealed plastic bags, that took about another hour and a half. So working with the skeleton was about 2.5 hours out of the 6 that we were in there. And it was pretty important to get each individual bone wrapped up and sealed in plastic, because coming from that nearly 100% humidity environment, coming out into northeastern Utah in the late summer, it was significantly drier. So we had to be careful that the bones didn't dry out too quickly, and so that's why we sealed them up. And then when we did go to open the bags, we opened them very slowly and gave them plenty of time to dry out slowly back here at the museum. About 2 months total we spent letting all those things dry out.
I understand these actually will be on display at some point.
They will, yeah. Hopefully sometime this year we'll have at least some of the skeleton out on exhibit for a little while. There are a few bones that we still need to clean up, and some may be too fragile to have out, but we'll have at least some of it out on exhibit at some point this year, yes.
What can you tell us about the Red Fox in general? They were around quite a long time ago.
Yeah, they have been around North America for quite a while, over 100,000 years, and they're pretty widespread. The time that this fox was around was quite a bit colder than it is now, but was actually from a time right before the last glacial maximum, and so it was right before the most recent really cold that it got around here before it started warming up recently. So we can imagine the Uinta Mountains back then were probably quite snow-covered, and we can only imagine why the fox went so far back into the cave. But we hope to learn more from it here in the future. There's been a possibility that we can do another age on it. We don't expect the age to change that much, but we can increase the precision. We can basically reduce the error on the age. Right now, it's 26,400 plus or minus 650 years. And nowadays, you can get that down to plus or minus less than 100. So we can really zoom in on exactly what age it is, which will allow us to kind of place it better relative to the different glacial periods. But we also hope to possibly run some DNA on the animal, too, and see how it's related to other Ice Age foxes that have been found around Western North America.
For our listeners out there who don't have pictures to visualize it, how big is it compared to some of the foxes that we see today?
It's pretty similar, really. It's small dog size. I would say the lower jaw is maybe about 4 inches long or so. So pretty comparable to a modern red fox.
And this one actually got a name, too.
Yes. We don't have nicknames for a lot of our specimens here at the museum, but this one seemed to really need one. And so we had a poll, actually, on our Facebook page, and everybody chose Roxy.
My daughter, growing up, she had a little fox, like a teddy bear, and she named it Roxy, too. So it's kind of funny.
Nice.
I know she didn't vote for it one way or the other, but it's funny that it was named the same.
Yeah.
Any guesses on the color?
That's a good question. I'd really have to ask some painted specialists for that. I would assume that it's pretty similar to red foxes today, although at that time, if it was so snowy, you do wonder if some of them might have been a little bit lighter colored, similar to what Arctic foxes are today. But I don't know that, and I'll bet the painted people might know if the colors varied much.
And this one here is being prepped to be on display at some point. What do you have to do to continue prepping? And I know you've been trying to dry out the bones, and I'm sure there's still quite a process to get it ready to be seen in the public again.
Yeah, the main thing we need to do is stabilize it, and that was kind of the critical period of drying it out, making sure that it didn't dry too quickly so that the bones didn't start cracking. They can dry out without cracking. The main key is that they dry slowly. It's fast drying that tends to make them crack. And we seem to have gotten them pretty well dried out. They don't seem to be cracking. I think they're pretty stable. And at this point, all we really need to do is remove some of the mud that's still sticking to some of them and get a little bit of that very thin calcium carbonate crust off some of the bones as well.
It's fascinating to me that you'll be able to pull DNA from bones this old under those conditions.
Yeah, I'm used to working on things that are extremely old, back from the Jurassic, dinosaurs and other things like that. So this is a whole new animal, literally, and having basically unfossilized bone that you can get DNA out of, you can get a precise age off of directly from the bone, and to be able to make all those comparisons and collecting it, having essentially the entire skeleton there, it's so different from what I'm used to and with a much older material that this has really been an exciting thing to work on.
I bet. For folks who've never been to your museum, how do they get there, and what do you have on display that they can expect to see?
Well, we are on the eastern side of downtown Vernal here in northeastern Utah, and we have a lot of exhibits that are on Jurassic dinosaurs and then also Eocene age mammals and plants. They're kind of our two specialties in the exhibits. There's also a working lab that you can see people working in. And then we have temporary exhibits with various different things from the collections. And when Roxy is on exhibit, she will be one of those.
How much is admission?
That is $10 for adults and $5 for kids.
Again, if folks want to visit, do the annual park passes cover those?
Yes, if you have a state parks pass for Utah, you get in for free, yes.
Great yeah. Destination this time of year. Gets you out of the weather, and you can see some great dinosaur exhibits. Get you out of the weather and have some indoor adventures with the family. What are the hours? When are you open?
We are open 9 to 5, Monday through Saturday right now.
In the summer months, I know Devin with State Parks and a couple other folks out there have mentioned in previous interviews with us that early summer thereabouts, oftentimes there's an opportunity to explore with you guys and find dinosaur bones. Is that happening again this next year, do you know?
We haven't set an exact window for that, but we did have a dinosaur dig last July. And we're shooting, probably do that again, probably in the same area and possibly the same time of year, sometime in likely July or August.
I know that a couple of the predecessors from Devon actually have really had a kick out of it, and they have an opportunity to discover things just like you guys do.
Yeah, basically we're just doing what we normally do, and people help us out. And so you never really know what you're going to find. Last year, we found a number of sauropod dinosaur vertebrae and limb bones, and it was a lot of fun. It ended up being a longer project than we expected.
That's all right. It seems like that's always taking longer for me to get projects done than I think it would, too. So it's
yeah.
Very familiar. What's neat about this is it's an opportunity to touch something and see something that has maybe not seen the light for tens of thousands of years, if not hundreds of thousands of years.
Yep. Beautiful setting out there, too. Most places we work are pretty nice.
You really get to appreciate the effort that goes into finding these things and then how they're cared for and how they're prepped and how they're moved on to the next stages. This is an experience. If folks have any interest in doing that, if I remember correctly, you have to be a minimum of 16 years old to participate.
That's correct. And as one of my mentors said early on, the number one tool you need is patience. It's oftentimes not a very fast process.
Yeah, I remember an interview with Eugene Swalberg years ago, and he was saying the same thing. It's not like you see it on Indiana Jones digging up and finding these things or Jurassic Park. It's a lot of effort, and the heat and everything else, you really get to appreciate what an archaeologist does and the challenges they run into as they try to find something amazing.
Yeah, and as I tell people a lot, out in the field, you usually end up on plan D before you end up getting things out, because what you see when you first find something, you can have an idea what it is and how you're going to get out, but plans change at least two or three times before you ever end up getting anything out of the ground. So, yeah, patience and flexibility are really the key.
I'm guessing that when it does open, you'll probably have about a 6-week or 8-week notice, a heads up, and watch the calendars, because I know these things do fill up quickly.
Yes. We should know, hopefully, in the spring about what time we'll actually do this next year, but it should be midsummer.
What do participants usually need to bring with them?
Mostly hats, sunscreen, water bottles, things like that. We provide all the tools and instruction, things like that, but mainly just dealing with the elements. We usually avoid June because of bugs, all the gnats out here. So most of the time, people don't really need to worry about bug spray. But in this part of the country, certainly if you're doing any work in May or June, you need gnat protection for sure.
Good advice. Check it out, folks. Again, a great destination year-round. Your museum's open year-round pretty much.
Yes.
Anything else you'd like to share with folks out there?
Nope. Just we will try to let everybody know when Roxy's on exhibit. And thanks again to the Forest Service for their help on this project. And we hope everybody enjoys seeing the little fox when she's on exhibit.
I'm looking forward to it. Mr. John Foster joining us with the Utah Fieldhouse of Natural History State Park Museum. Thanks for taking a few minutes with us.
Thank you very much.
There's no option in times of emergency. We have the freeze-dried food next on Western Life Radio.
If you would like a little more from your range experience than standing and shooting holes in paper, come and train with us, TaylorGunsmithing.com.
There's nothing quite like the great outdoors, and at Sportsman's Warehouse, we share your passion for hunting, fishing, and camping. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. So whether you're ice fishing, predator hunting, snowshoeing, or winter camping, Sportsman's Warehouse has a terrific selection of all the latest equipment for your outdoor adventure. So when it's cold outside, that's the time to come and see what's hot inside. At Sportsman's Warehouse, take it outside. Stocking up on freeze-dried food will help fuel the belly in times of emergency. Peter Milburn with Sportsman's Warehouse. Samples the Chicken a la King.
To go through, make sure all your propane bottles at your house are full of propane. And for a real emergency situation at home, say we have an earthquake or something, God forbid something bad happens like that, now we have so many conveniences available to us. There's so many packaged food options that are already out there, already done. You can go buy a 5-gallon bucket that has like 180 meals in it, all packaged in there, but you're going to need water to go with it. But you can have that in a corner in a closet in your house, and if a situation comes up where for some reason you can't get to the supermarket or all the power's out, you've got some meals that are there for an emergency situation. And they're very economical, very convenient, very compact, easy thing to have in your house. They've got the little chemical heaters. You put them in there, put a little water in them, and they do a little bit of oxidation process that heats it right up, just like the MREs the military uses. It's great, and it's great in an emergency situation. They're very economical. The shelf life on them is multiple years on many of them. And a bunch of them, man, they sure taste a lot better than in my dad's day when he was eating sea rations in Korea. You know what I'm saying? So the modern stuff, boy, I mean, some of the meals they have are really phenomenal out there. I mean, they actually, there's guys at work that buy them off the shelf and come up and eat them for lunch. That's how good they are. And, you know, just to reinforce, make sure your flashlights have new batteries in them. Make sure you've got some propane and some propane bottles so if an emergency situation you need to use your camp stove for cooking, you've got some of that. Maybe some charcoal and lighter fluid that you can use a Dutch oven and cook when you've got a power outage situation.
Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.
Play safe, play sober. BUI is boating under the influence. It is illegal to operate a motorboat while under the influence of alcohol. And in Utah, BUI penalties are the same as DUI. It will cost you money and may cost you your life. Play safe, play sober. Visit stateparks.com. www.utah.gov. This message brought to you by Utah State Parks Boating Program.
When snowmobiling, be prepared. Keep your machine in top condition. Always carry a toolkit, first aid kit, emergency supplies, and spare parts. Always let someone know where you're going and when you'll be back. Use the buddy system and never snowmobile alone. This message is brought to you by Utah State Parks OHV Education.
Only in the forest can you see this. And this. And this. But nothing beats the moment you see that. That's your child's eyes opening up to a world of possibilities.
I didn't know it could do that!
Because one trip to the forest can spark a world of difference.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go, like hiking, canoeing, fishing, or camping. Or create your own adventure with family and friends, and you might just see this. Your moment's out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Phil Douglas from the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources, and I'd like to invite you to put a little wild in your life with a unique chance to see wild elk. Each winter, the DWR conducts sleigh rides to see Rocky Mountain elk at the Hardware Wildlife Management Area, located 17 miles east of Hiram, Utah, in the beautiful Blacksmith Fork Canyon. For hours, directions, and ticket prices, visit our website. Oh, what fun it is to ride.
He's born up on Sandy Creek, like his daddy'd been before. The Kincaids ranched up on that bench 100 years or more. But there's a cold wind of change blowing. Ain't hard to see the sign. The banker's out of patience and Buster's out of time. Now they're plowing down the old Diamond O, and Buster's there where Standing Bear stood not that long ago. And those old cold winds of change had blowed away his buffalo. Now they're plowing down the old Diamond O. They sent the sheriff out from town. He was a kindly man. Told Buster he was sorry about the papers in his hand. But he got his granddad's saddle gun and stepped up on old Dan and struck a lope up on the ridge. That's where he'd make his stand. Now they're plowing down the old Diamond O, and Buster's there where Standing Bear stood not that long ago. And those old cold winds of change had blowed away his buffalo. Now they're plowing down the old Diamond O. They found him there next morning. He just slept away. He died there of a broken heart is all that they could say. Now gone is all the meadow grass the Lord put there to grow. First Standing Bear, and then Buster. Now gone is the Diamond O. Yeah, they're plowing down the old Diamond O, and Buster's there where Standing Bear stood not that long ago. And those old cold winds of change had blowed away his buffalo. They're plowing down the old Diamond O.
Discovering life in the backcountry wild, exploring the west.
past with its treasures abounding, with the soul of a sportsman and heart of a child. Wild and free, the song of the mountains is calling to me. Wild and free, in the great western wildlands, discover the backcountry dream.
Folks, you've been listening to Western Life Radio, a 30-year outdoor and western lifestyle tradition. Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.